Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer.
Hey, so this last, well, first, how was your week?
How was my week? Well, it's only Wednesday.
Yeah.
But boy, it's been a long week. It's been a long week.
But it's actually Monday.
It feels like Monday. So far, Every day this week has felt like Monday, except for Monday, which felt like Sunday.
Yeah. And for our listeners, it's next Monday.
Oh, right. I always forget about the time delay. Speaking of time delay, there's a time delay between our signals and a time delay between our recording and our distribution.
But your week going good so far?
Oh, sure. Sure. Let's say it's going great. Right. How's your week going, Doug?
So far, so good. Hey, I was like out in the garage and found some old stuff, put a bicycle on Marketplace, got all my old Xbox games and took them down to the pawn shop and a few other odds and ends of some stuff that had some value and sold it. And I ended up with $1,000.
Oh, nice.
And what do you think I ought to do? You know, I got $1,000 to spend.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. Yeah, well, I know what you would do. You would get yourself a couple of outboard compressors on the gray market. some knockoff LA-2A kind of stuff, probably.
Yeah. But what if I didn't have any of this, but I was interested in it?
Yeah, that's a funny thing. Like, what would you do if you needed to just get started and you had, say, $1,000?
Yeah.
Now, I was thinking about this.
And I wanted to say that you could definitely get started for less than $1,000, but
in terms of getting started, I had a whole different thought. And the whole different thought that I had was that last week we were talking about a lot of things like mic pre's and interfaces. And it occurred to me that
you and I were hanging out and talking.
Yeah. And I think some of that was on the podcast, but I was just wondering if everybody knows what those things are or what they would buy if they were starting out.
That's a good thought. What is an interface?
What is an interface? Well, the interface, obviously, obviously. It's not obvious, necessarily. We think it's obvious because we've been using these things for years. It's a box, generally, that goes between your computer and whatever you're recording, and it's an interface. It takes signal in and puts signal into your computer.
Yeah.
Usually these days, it's USB or Lightning or whatever the, you know, the connection du jour is. I'm still using a USB one.
As am I, and perfectly fine with it. I'm happy with it.
And I think that any of the new ones are kind of on par with each other at a certain level. Like you can get into an interface for like $130, $150 and it's going to be miles above anything that was out 10 years ago.
Yeah. And there's bundles. Interfaces with microphones and headphones and things
there's
like
whole,
that.
Like, yeah, if you go on Sweetwater or Musician's Friend, you can get a podcast starter bundle that'll probably come with an interface and a blue microphone with a little stand and software to record with.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many little things, the stand, the cable, or cables.
That gets overlooked a lot. Like there really is a difference between a good cable and a poor cable.
You may not
tell at the beginning when you're starting out and you don't have a fine ear and you don't have anything to compare it to.
Too.
Yeah, there's a big price difference.
And like in the interfaces, the important part of an interface is the mic preamp.
Right.
That is basically what takes the signal coming in from the microphone and amplifies it and then sends it to the computer at whatever the, then you process that through your DAW and then back out again. A DAW is a digital audio workstation. It's a piece of software that runs.
I hear people call that a DAW because it really is an acronym, and I hear other people call it a DAW. I go back and forth myself. I don't really have a religion on what it's called, but.
Yeah, if I'm typing it out, I'm saying DAW in my head, but when I'm saying it. So
it's like the GIF thing.
Yeah. And then that sends a preamp signal out to either an amplifier or to monitors that have built-in power amplifiers.
Or to your headphones.
To your headphones. And most interfaces have headphone jacks, at least one. Most have two.
That's true. You can bypass your DAW with your interface most times with in and the out. You can send direct out from your interface often to a mixing desk or a,
definitely
some other output directly from it, bypass the DAW you altogether.
You could get like a four-track recorder. It's just a small recording appliance that you can then take your signal out from your interface into the recording. It's usually like a small mixer. And sometimes those actually have their own mic preamps in them.
Now, I know that we were talking about preamps last week. So my audio box PreSonus guy here has preamp built in. Mm-hmm. And I think most of them do because microphone signals and instrument signals are very different. Like a direct output from your guitar cable plugged into an interface is going to be at a really low signal, as is a dynamic microphone, like your standard SM58 or SM57.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have phantom power, which is what powers a condenser microphone, which are the kind that you probably see in movies and TV with the hanging from the ceiling or whatever. It's the bigger diaphragm. They're more sensitive. Sometimes they have a little high-end sheen to them that you don't have in a dynamic microphone. They require what's called phantom power. It's 48 volts of power.
Yep.
So it's always good when you're looking for an interface, I think, and you're going to use microphones with it, to make sure that it does have phantom power.
Yeah, and actually, we should kind of get into microphones a little bit, but I don't want to jump around too much. But let's come back to that, because there's some distinct differences in microphone types, like you mentioned condenser.
Yeah, I think we could do a whole episode just on microphones. Yeah,
but the other side of that is dynamic mics, and they don't require phantom power.
Right. But they also have a lower signal.
Yeah. And there are different applications for different types of microphones as well. And so depending on the audio sources that you'd like to record, may have a real impact on the microphone that you choose to record it with.
Well, this is something that I actually wanted to ask you. I know that, you have a bigger mic locker than I do. You do a lot more like in-studio recording than I do. And I wanted to ask you, what you think the reason is that while most singers who are professionally recording will sing in a studio into a condenser microphone, while most voice-specific things like, radio, DJs, people who are doing podcasting, broadcasting, and that kind of stuff tend to use like the standard Shure SM7B dynamic microphone. Why do you think there's that split there?
I think it's because condenser mic. Okay, this is an opinion.
Okay.
I think it's because condenser microphones are typically much more sensitive than dynamic microphones are. And as a result, it is harder to control your noise floor with a condenser microphone.
I think that's right, because in a broadcast booth, the mic's going to get knocked around. It's going to get, people are going to bump the table. They're going to hit the boom arm. Whereas in a studio with a singer, it's a more controlled environment.
Yeah. If it's an interview situation, then you're dealing with bleed. You want to have good rejection. So those mics that you mentioned, the dynamic ones like the SM7B or the Electro Voice, but those are the industry standard broadcasting microphones, have an excellent rejection pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't pick up a lot of noise behind them. So you can have two people across the desk from each other talking without as much bleed as you would get from a condenser type of microphone.
That makes sense.
Now, in my studio here, I have good sound absorption. I'm using a condenser microphone, and it is very sensitive. And it will pick up, if I have noise going on about the studio, it's going to come in. I will go through this recording in post and listen for, any background noise. However, when there's no other people or something like that causing noise, I have a very low noise floor here. And then I also have a strategy on how I route my signal into the recording. And so an interesting way to deal with that with a condenser microphone is to not crank your gain on your audio interface. So the mic preamp gain, if you keep that low, then you can keep the microphone from being quite as sensitive as it normally would be and reduce the overall noise floor.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and I do that by boosting the signal first and then running it from the device that I use to boost it into the interface where I actually, my interface is on zero right now. It is a 0% gain.
So it's just passing the signal through from your preamp.
Yeah.
Your external preamp.
Yeah, so it is, I have plenty of gain, but as far as the interface is concerned, it's very, very low. So it's the sensitivity level of the microphone is much less than what it would be if I went directly into my interface and then had to turn my interface up to maybe, you know, 60% or something like that.
Yeah, which is what I'm doing. And I do have, the gain is still clean up to a point. After that, then you're dealing with the signal level and you're dealing with the, you know, whatever's in the cable and whatever's in the ambient room that you don't hear with your naked ear until you turn the gain up all the way.
Yeah,
but I do have to be sensitive to, you know, drinking water here, or putting my pen down or whatever else I'm doing in this little booth that I'm in right now.
Yeah, me too. I mean, my hands are in my lap with my hands folded, you know, because I'm a very animated talk even by myself here in the studio. I got to be careful not to bump the tables and things like that. So I just kind of try and keep my hands in my lap while I'm talking. So
I can only do that like I did this morning at the dentist, where I just keep my hands in my lap. I
don't... And then I leave there all white knuckled every time, you know, because I've been like hanging onto the dental chair. I would like to get one of those dental chairs like somewhere like in front of the TV or something here at home. Those things are awesome.
Get a gamer chair is probably cheaper. Yeah. So I've actually been toying with the idea of that concept because I do have a tube mic pre, the art tube that I used to use all the time. And I stopped using it because I upgraded my computer and no longer have a analog audio in, although that tended to be a little noisy. So I think I'm going to play with running that directly into my PreSonus interface and use it as a mic pre instead of using the gain on the PreSonus, which I don't have a problem with the sound from the mic pre and the PreSonus, but I don't like that I have to turn it this high in order to get a good level on my mic.
Does the backside of that art preamp have balanced
XLR
outputs?
Yes.
So you go out of whatever channel your mic is coming into and take that into your preamp.
Yep.
Right into the microphone, you know, the XLR, and you'd have the same strategy as what I'm running.
Yep.
That would work really good.
I'm going to try that.
I think that tube would be really nice. I bet that will sound excellent.
Maybe I'll do that next week.
Give it a try. Be fun.
So let's say we were talking about, before I remembered that I wasn't recording, we were talking about the idea of getting started on a budget. And I think that there is like the minimalist version, and then there's the maximalist version, and then there's a comfortable level somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And I think the minimalist version that we know is someone has an iPhone with free GarageBand on it. You get a little interface from IK Multimedia, and you go to town with free GarageBand and use your headphones.
And those are great. That was actually the first interface I had. I had it was a very small one, almost like a cigarette lighter size.
Yep.
And it had a quarter-inch input, plug your guitar into it. And then it had a...
eighth-inch phono.
Yeah, eighth-inch phono. And then it had a headphone out on it.
Yeah, I still have that, the iRig.
Yeah, iRig. And it worked horribly with the Apple earbuds, but it worked good with other ones.
I actually enjoyed that for a while, but when I got a look at the signal, I mean, I really liked the Amplitube guitar sims that are on there, but
I found the signal
looked really just like squashed and compressed, and
it
sounded better listening to it when I was practicing than when I put it in a recording and tried to do anything with it.
You know, but I've heard great recordings through IK stuff as well.
Oh, yeah. We know some people that have put out albums recording that way.
Sure.
Definitely nothing against that. For the next level up, it kind of assumes that we were talking about what can you put together for $1,000?
Yeah. And that's also, it's the way that you work or the way that I work, or for the listener, it could be completely different because the way that, our listener might want to have a workflow would be different than the way I imagine it.
Right. Well, I think you and I represent basically two, not extremes, but definitely two ends of a small bell curve where, yeah. You know, I work very portably with my interface and a laptop, and you work very stably, whatever the opposite of portably would be, in a, you know, a built out home studio with outboard gear and, you know, monitors. But I think at a minimum, when we're talking about what do you get for $1,000, I think we have to assume that you have a computer available, because otherwise you're already going over the $1,000.
Yeah, that's definitely a key assumption. So, and instruments and things like that, you know, those are all unrelated. Right. So this would just be what it would take to
start recording.
Yeah, start recording. And, you know, we could say, what's it take to record guitar? Because that's only going to be one mic. But if we're thinking about what's it take to record drums, well,
that's
you might want to have two or three at a minimum microphones. And depending on the size, there's more microphones involved normally in miking a drum kit. But, you know, in a real extreme budget, you could have a good condenser mic back away from the drum kit, so that it's more of a room mic and capture the whole kit. You just won't have the definition that you would if you were miking individual drum instruments.
Right. You can get away with, you know, three mics or whatever if you're doing like Glyn Johns method.
Yeah.
So let's ask this. So let's, now we're into drum miking all of a sudden, but would you rather, if you had, say, X number of dollars to spend on mics to mic a drum kit, would you rather get, say, three high quality mics and be creative about the way you place them to capture that kit? Or would you go online and buy one of those bundled mic sets for drums that comes with a kick mic and a couple of overheads and some pencil condensers for
your snare? Not on a $1,000 budget. So I would break the budget just in the microphone kit.
I haven't priced those. I'm assuming that there are, like anything, levels.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably get into a really inexpensive, not quality, which is against what you just said. So you're talking about a quality set.
Well, I'm talking price performance. I go back and forth. I feel like if you're going to spend the money, buy one good mic, and later when you can afford better, buy a better mic.
Or if I did it, I would spend $400 and I would get the Shure 5257 kit.
Okay.
And that would have your bass drum mic with three SM57s and drum rim clips.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And then I would probably look to spend maybe, you can do really well for a couple $100 on a match set of small diaphragm condenser microphones.
For your overheads?
For your overheads. And you would have a killer, you'd be fine. That's all you'd need. So you'd be able to mic with that. I think the only thing you might not have is like a floor tom. You'd be catching your floor tom from one of your other tom mics or, you know, from one of the SM57s. You know, if you wanted later, you could add a lower frequency mic, much like a kick mic. One of the, you know, a bassier mic, it would be good for floor tom, I think.
All right. Well, most people that probably are listening, or most people we know, don't have a place to put a drum kit or mic it up or play it.
But then you're in $700 then at that point, I think. Yep. And the mic clips are nice because that saves you the price of having to buy stands, and they work really nicely. So, because you don't have to try and figure out the room and everything to get the microphone stands in place.
That's true. And I think that's why they're so popular, close miking the drums. Although, you know, there's something to be said about getting, you know, a more natural room sound of drums as opposed to the close miking where you're going to just sample replace everything anyway.
Yeah. But you can still get the room too.
Yeah. With a separate mic.
Yep. And I think, you know, some guys like to do that in like a stereo room setup. So they'll have a couple mics in the back, pan left, pan right, to capture the room in a stereo and blend that together.
Yeah. Well, having mixed bled drums versus dry drums, bleeding drums it can be a challenge to mix.
But in the end, it's always like, wow, that actually worked out so much better than I originally thought. Because when you're listening to the individual tracks,
Yeah.
And you're hearing everything else.
You're
come
just
in.
Like, what the heck were they thinking?
I think it's more distracting than it is anything trying to figure out how to make. If it's a snare and you're getting so much hi-hat and tom coming into that snare drum or something like that or the ride. So.
But when you put it all together, it's kind of like when you have overlays of cyan, magenta, blue, and yellow. And you're like, this looks like crap. And then you put it all together and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
When you get it balanced properly, you're like, oh, hey, that sounds like a drum kit.
And then really all you, the biggest thing is to be concerned with is phase, because that bleed that's coming in could be out of phase.
Right.
You know, because you got a mic that's 26 inches away from its source and another channel has the same source and it's a close mic and those are out of phase.
That's always a challenge.
Yeah.
Having just done that this week in our little mix challenge that we'll talk about next week.
Yeah.
Well, so back to starting out, I feel like a lot of people are just going to be like a guitar plugged into an interface, plugged into their computer, running some DAW, maybe that came with their interface. A lot of interfaces do come with a bundled software, Studio One or, you know, anything really, Cubase.
Yeah. I would also add, if you're a bass player, rather than purchase a microphone here, you could purchase a direct input box and then work with your bass sound, your tone.
Yeah, I think we touched on that before, that we frequently will just use the DI signal, the direct input signal for a bass.
I will normally do both. So what I would do is actually I would mic it and DI it.
Yeah, if I get both, I do blend the two. Mm-hmm. But I definitely like to have the DI. You get a cleaner bottom end.
Yeah. So let's assume, you know, just one microphone, it's a guitar. So there's $100 or less, there's $80 somewhere in there for an SM57 would be my recommendation.
If you get it on sale.
I think
they're like $90, $100.
Yeah.
They're in now, the of course, you could get some of this stuff used, you know. You get a used computer on Craigslist. People are always selling their stuff. But,
you know, this stuff is so expensive. I absolutely recommend always checking the used marketplace.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Reverb.com or eBay. Although on eBay, you got to watch out for gray market. I bought once a pair of what I'm wearing right now, Sony. I had to look. Sony 7506s, you know, the classic broadcast booth headphones. That's what I use. My original pair, turned out, I got it on eBay, were a gray market pair that were knockoffs, and I thought they were original. And I ended up having to go back and remix a bunch of stuff because they didn't have a true response. And I didn't find out until, I don't even remember how I found an article online saying, watch out for a gray market, you know, headphones. And I'm like, wait a minute, that looks like what I'm wearing right now.
Yeah. And same thing with microphones.
Yeah.
So you've got
absolutely.
You definitely got to watch that. And there are plenty of videos on
there's some
YouTube.
Videos that tell you how to find the gray market ones. And
yeah,
watch out. What I was going to say about the Shures is that they hold their value so well because they're such an industry standard, the SM5758, that it's hard to find them used for much less than just going and buying a new one. You might as well buy a new one. People don't get rid of those things. They just keep them around forever.
Yeah.
Because they don't go bad. So you got a mic.
Yeah, you got a mic.
You got an interface. You're in the interface for what?
Now,
130,
for guitar,
150?
For guitar, you could get away without even having a stand here, because you could loop your cable down and hang a SM57 down in front of the driver.
Oh, yeah. I see people do that at shows.
Sure.
They just loop. Just
now, for recording, I don't think I would be so keen on that because I'm concerned with exactly where that microphone is pointing.
Yeah, mic stands aren't so expensive that, I mean, you can get one for, what, $20 with a boom arm and just like, because you want to be able to place it where it sounds the best.
Yeah, and, you know, there's lots of different schools of thought on that, but,
definitely. From the grill, off center. Everybody has their taste.
Exactly, and every driver's different. You know, if you have a 412 cabinet, you may be miking the lower, you know, bottom right one, because it has a different tone than the upper left one.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. And you definitely should mic and listen to every speaker in your cabinet to find if there's one that you favor over others.
Right.
Yeah. And then you got a cable, and that cable's going to run to that interface that we talked about.
Yeah. And that's going to run you at least $20.
Yeah. And so those usually come in 20-foot lengths in that neighborhood.
Right.
And that would be a balanced XLR cable, and That would it would plug into the microphone on one end and into your interface on the other. And so that's how the signal from your amplifier will get to the interface. And then you need the interface is going to come with USB cable. So you've already you already have the connection to your computer.
Right.
And
let's assume it came with let's assume it came bundled with software.
Okay.
And you use let's say you choose not to purchase an additional DAW. You use
let's say you bought a Focusrite and it comes with what do they come with? Well, anyway, it comes with a light version of one of the popular DAWs. Okay.
Right. My PreSonus came with Studio One, but of course it's like, as you say, the light version, you'd have to upgrade to the full version.
Yeah. But for recording yourself in one channel, you're set. That's all you need, more than you need.
If you're on a Mac, GarageBand is free. You can use that with any interface.
Yep. So, okay. So there's nothing to purchase there. You've got the software. And
let's say you're using stock plugins. And you haven't subscribed to Wave's mailing list and fall into that the trap of buying third-party plugins every other week.
Yeah. So now you're able to record your signal, okay? And your DAW comes with a bunch of free plugins and things like that that you can use to, you know, post-process the signal if you want. And
can I say something right here, which is that for people starting out, don't jump to buying third-party plugins before you learn the ones that your DAW comes with.
Great point.
You should be able to make a commercial-level sounding mix with your stock plugins in any modern DAW if you learn how to use them properly.
Yeah.
End rant.
So the other part of that is your monitoring. So while you're playing.
Yes.
You know, you can certainly listen to your amplifier, but what you're really interested in when you're recording is what does the signal coming in sound like?
Right.
So headphones. Okay. Now,
at a minimum, some good studio quality headphones.
But I'm really thinking where we're at right now is we've got about $130 in $150 in microphone and cable and stand. And then let's say we've got, I don't know, $350 in an interface, fair enough.
Oh, that's way better than the one I have.
And
I'm saying you can get into an interface for about half that. So,
well, yeah, okay.
$130, $150 for the Focusrite Red. If you only need two channels,
the 2x2 or the Solo, even if you wanted just a single,
right. Yeah,
you can get there for $150. So we're at $300, and you've got room for a really good pair of studio monitors if you want.
Now, what would you say for somebody starting out? You don't have you're not building a studio. You're a bedroom producer, or you're starting to build out your home studio in your garage or your spare bedroom or whatever. For a pair of good quality prosumer level.
This is monitors. Where I want to take the rest of my budget and I'm going to spend it because I'm not going to save any of my $1,000. I'm going to put it all into this. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would buy a pair of headphones first because you're going to want to double check.
Yeah.
I find
the headphones are probably, you know, you might spend
$150.
Yeah, that's what I'd say too.
For you don't have to buy the latest and greatest. I mean, you can get ones for $250, $300. Yeah. But
so
I mean,
we're at $450 the broadcast, there then.
Yeah, the broadcast ones I'm using right now, they're like $90.
Yeah. So
we got
$550 to spend. Some Calis.
I like the Calis.
LP6s or something like that.
They're $500 a pair, is that right?
Yeah, somewhere right in that neighborhood.
The LP6s. They come in white now.
Yeah, they do.
I like the black.
Now, how much are the LP8s? Are they just over budget?
I want to say they're $750 a pair.
Are they?
Okay. About that. I might go with the iLouds. The IK Multimedia iLouds are getting really good reviews.
Yeah.
I think you can get those bundled with the SonarWorks reference, which allows you to check your room to find out how to either treat your room or how to alter the signal in your computer to make up for deficiencies in the way your room sounds.
Yeah, and that's digital signal processing.
Yes.
You might say DSP is the acronym for that, and that's kind of a keyword around. The SonarWorks is a software version of that. So that digital signal processing actually happens on the digital side. You can also get external DSPs, which is what I use, which happens outside of the computer domain and is just something that's in the signal path.
I think I may have to run that back. I think that SonarWorks makes their reference for, and IK Multimedia makes their own version of it, which they bundle with the iLoud. I think that's how it works. There are a couple ones. I feel like I hear about the SonarWorks one a lot more.
Hey, you know the LP6s? They're 150 each. So $300 bucks for LP6s.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Yeah. You can get into some Yamaha, the HS5s. You might even be able to get into some HS8s and the Yamahas.
Now, these numbers, the 5 and the 8, they almost always refer to the size, the diameter of the speaker. And
okay, here you go. Here's the one I would go with, I think. In the $500 range, I would go with the Atom Audio T7.
Ooh, good tip.
Yeah, that would be a nice entry level, good value, you know, for the remaining budget monitor, in my opinion.
So let me ask
you.
Got to
remember, this is more than just speakers. It's also power amplifiers.
Right, they're power amplified speakers. So what are you looking for when you're looking at a speaker for your home studio?
Your room is important. How big is your room? If you've got a really small room, then I think you're going to be fine with some 5-inch power.
Right, you're not going to want 8s or 10s.
Right.
In a spare bedroom, probably.
A larger room, and I don't have a huge studio, but it's large enough that 8s are appropriate for the size of my room. You know, so that's one of the main things. The larger the drivers generally affects the price as well. So
sure.
You know, if you're price driven, that might dictate whether or not you get a 6 or an 8 or something like that.
Yeah. If you go 5 or smaller, I'm going to say you're probably now compromising the trueness of your sound.
Yeah. Yeah. So something I like the Atom 7 because that would probably work for just about, you know, that's it would work for just about any regular bedroom recording studio, you know, or I think that would be a really nice one. So you would have everything that you need. I think you would get good bass response from it, which is probably one of the areas that most studio monitors lack.
True.
You know, especially in the lower range.
Yeah, I think even commercial studios have trouble with that, and they'll often have a subwoofer in their room.
And I think I should say, I'll ask rhetorically here, why is that important? And the reason on that is that when you are listening to what you've recorded, you need your monitors to tell you the truth about what is actually has been recorded.
Yes.
And if there is plenty of bass in your recording, but your monitors don't reproduce bass well, then you might be mixing this later and add a bunch of bass EQ because of the way you hear it. And
this is a common problem.
Yeah, and then when you release your music, it's like way over bass and you never realized it because the speakers that you're listening to it on don't reproduce bass. But as soon as someone else listens to your music and they have a bigger set of stereo speakers or the home or subwoofer in their car or wherever that your music is getting listened to, now this matters a great deal.
Yeah, so this is why it's important when you're mixing to use song references that you know very well so that you can compare. And also...
what song have you listened to? I mean, don't answer, but you know, you want to ask yourself, what song have I listened to for decades? Because I know that song well. I know how that song's supposed to sound. I know if there's not enough bass on that because I've listened to it 1,000 times. You know, I can use that as my reference track to when I listen to it on my recording, in my recording environment, then I can say, hey, you know, this doesn't sound like the way that I think it should. You know, it
doesn't have enough bass. You should start out listening to a CD that you're super familiar with or songs that you're super familiar with. Get a feel for the room, get a feel for the speakers. Oh, the other thing I was going to say was that's why it's also important to not just listen to anything you're mixing on one pair of speakers, but reference it on multiple pairs of speakers so that you can get an idea of, oh, that doesn't sound the way I thought it was going to sound.
Right. That's a very common thing. And we joke about it, but it's true. The first place to go after recording and mixing is the car. and that's, it's absolutely the truth. It will, the car will tell you the truth.
It will. Even if your car doesn't have the greatest stereo, you listen to music in your car so much that you'll know immediately.
Yeah. If you take that reference track that you've listened to in your car so often and you bring it in and listen to that, then playback in your listening environment of your studio, you'll hear the differences. And so when you're mixing, you want to keep those differences in mind. If I know that my speakers don't reproduce bass, I don't want to go push in a bunch of bass and make it sound like there's like the bass should be there and drive that into the speakers, because then I'm doing something to the signal that I shouldn't do because my speakers aren't telling me the true story of what I'm actually hearing.
Yeah. And so circling back a little, one of the reasons I advocated for getting headphones before monitors was because when you're tracking or listening back, your headphones are going to tell you stuff that you're going to miss in the big monitors. And maybe those little things like little breaths or something that when you're editing vocals, for instance,
Now there
little
is,
room
there
noise
is
or lip smacks.
Though.
You may not hear it in the final mix, but I like to get real fine detailed when I'm editing. And headphones are great for that. They will, like you just said, they will not tell you the truth necessarily when it comes to, one, stereo imaging, and two, bass response.
Yeah, and the actual motion of the, you know, movement of the air.
Right.
You're getting something completely different in headphones than you get from speakers. You got to do both, in my opinion. I know
I
a lot of, if you can, you know, some people.
If you can.
It's all you can do. If all you can do is headphones, awesome. Do your best. Listen to it in a lot of places and keep working in it. And eventually you'll know what you need, what you're hearing from your headphones represents. And you'll be able to work with that.
Yeah.
That's a matter of just listening a lot.
Referencing and listening on multiple speakers after you're ready to proof it, those will make up for all those deficiencies. Hopefully. And experience, of course.
So anyway, I hope that information helps. That was basically the full circle of recording a signal around all the way back to monitoring it. I'm sure that there's tons of questions that could come out of this, and there's several topics here that could take up entire shows. So we certainly
I think we may have to come back and do a microphone show and an interface show.
Oh, certainly.
A DAW show. But I think, I think we covered the basics here. And I think we stayed under budget.
Yeah, it's certainly easy to do. And like we said in the beginning, I think that $1,000 isn't necessary to get started. I think you could get started for $150, you know, and start out with a kit that comes with a headphones, a microphone, and an interface, and you're on, you know. So you can just plug your guitar directly into an interface if you want. You know, if you've got the amp, then if you can come up with an extra, you know, $90 for an SM57, then there you go. It doesn't have to take $1,000 to get into it.
True. And, you know, you can always be creative, getting stuff used, beg, borrowing, and stealing. Not the stealing part, but, you know, there's other ways to get gear. People are always upgrading their stuff or getting rid of all their old studio stuff on Craigslist, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that I might stay away from a used interface, only because you can get into a new one so cheaply these days that has better quality converters and better quality DSP that
I mean, not necessarily
bundle
sway
software.
Away from B-Stock. Have a look at B-Stock.
Sure.
You know, manufacturer refurbished stuff. I've never had a problem with anything I've ever bought B-Stock. And sometimes B-Stock was a demo on the floor.
Right.
You know, I mean, okay.
Oh, yeah, I've bought stuff. You know, guitar pedals or refurbished this or that is a great way to get a discount. It might be definitely factory refurbished. It might be as good as new, but they can't sell it as new. So they sell it that way.
You know, if it's a piece of equipment that goes in a rack and it has a scratch on the back that you're never going to see and you're going to save $30 because of it, do it.
Sure.
That $30 can go to, you know, do it as many times as you can whenever you buy your equipment so you can buy more equipment.
Yeah, that's a good way to make your dollar go farther and get into better equipment cheaper earlier rather than having to rebuy, you know, cheap equipment that you bought thinking that you'd upgrade it later and now you're really paying the cheap tax, having bought it twice.
Yeah, and the rule of thumb, this applies to basically everything in life, is like with tools and things like that as well, but the best that you can afford.
Yep.
And you'll be, whatever that is, you know, then you'll be getting what it is that you need at, you know, a level that you can afford. So just do the best that you can with it.
Agree. I think this is a good episode, Doug.
Yeah.
Considering we just came up with the topic half an hour before we started recording.
What do you want to do? I don't know.
I don't know. Let's go back to basics. It never hurts to revisit the basics.
Sure.
Well, I like that we got the chance to explain some of the things that I think we sometimes take for granted and just zoom past without explaining what it is.
I think that, you know, obviously this is going to be a little bit longer podcast. Not too much longer, so hopefully listeners will stick around. And anyway, we thank you all for hanging out, talking, getting started and recording with us.
Absolutely.
Have a great week.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
All right, take care.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.